Hello and welcome. This is an overdue, a much needed Sideline Guys off-season podcast. Pat Boylan alongside Jeremiah Johnson. Quick apology for having this much time pass in between podcasts. We had planned on doing one post-free agency time, and due to some extenuating circumstances, we weren't able to complete that, and then I took a little bit of a vacation, so we are a little bit behind in wanting to get something out here from the offseason, from the draft, from, of course, the big trade involving Paul George, and a plethora of moves that have involved the Pacers roster. Pat Boylan alongside Jeremiah Johnson. At this time, Jeremiah, we're in early August. We don't need to rehash, moment for moment what happened with the trades and these offseason moves, but as we were talking off-air just before this, you brought up, you know, kind of the interesting point in that it hasn't really been a long time since the Paul George trade and since a lot of these moves, bringing in Oladipo and Sabonis, Corey Joseph down the line, but it really does feel like the team, the fan base has moved on in a short period of time.
Yeah, Pat, great to be with you once again. And I know for those folks that were listening on the radio on Saturday, they got a brief glimpse of what we've been thinking this offseason as we hosted a couple of hours of the Saturday showcase on 1070 The Fan. So if you'd like a little extended version, I'm sure you can find that on the 1070 website. But yeah, as you said, 2 months is really a long time in the NBA, even when there are no games being played. I mean, at any point in time, 2 months is a long time. If you think about the way you think about a current team or a situation from November to January, or perhaps from February until April, but even from May to July, now it's actually early August. So let's say from early June to early August, so much has changed. Everything has a little bit of a different feel to it in and around this team. But I think that for the most part, while fans might have been frustrated at the very beginning about what the Pacers were able to get for Paul George, I do feel like that everybody is accepting the situation. They've heard what Kevin Pritchard and company have to say about their plan, how they went about it, what they were able to accomplish. And I think everyone is pretty happy, at least in central Indiana, about what Victor Oladipo can become. I don't think Victor is getting a fair shake nationally in terms of what some of the national podcasts that I listen to, that you listen to, some of the television segments on ESPN. I don't think people give Victor Oladipo a lot of credit. And I do think it's interesting that there's no in-between, it seems like, when people evaluate trades or deals, especially on a national level. It's either great or it's awful. And a year later, we often see the ones that are called awful, you know, we see it graded the other way. And I think if you think about where the Pacers will be with Domas Sabonis and also Victor Oladipo with 1 year under their belt and with a bright future in Indiana and the uncertainty that you would have faced with Paul George and an expiring contract and the situation really that Oklahoma City could be facing next year. And I think a year from now, I think people will look at the situation quite a bit differently. No one knows what the Pacers were offered from some of these other teams. And I think so many of those stories are exaggerated. And we're not going to spend an entire podcast talking about this, but because this is our first time together in this forum in the offseason, I just wanted to get that out there that the direction of this team building around young players that the Pacers have control over, that have a chance to grow, that were highly thought of coming out of the draft and have gained experience on championship or, I should say, playoff-worthy teams, I think it's a good foundation to build around. And I think it's safe to say with Kevin Pritchard and that entire front office right now, they're going to try different things. Not every move will work, and they're willing to take shots on guys, give someone an opportunity. But unless they feel really good about someone, I don't think it'll be a long-term contract. But there may be a little bit of cycling guys in and out, seeing who fits. And then when they find the guys they want, then they'll continue to keep and build around those guys.
Yeah, and to, you know, go back to those moments when the trade happened, a couple of the problems that I had with the general public outlash was the fact that at the time, you didn't know the offers that Kevin Pritchard had, and these were largely blown up by a Boston radio host that said these certain offers were on the table, which never ended up being true. And it's interesting now looking back on it about a month or so later, and you say, okay, well, it looks like they probably got the best return that they could have gotten, and it's, you know, a guy like Domantas Sabonis, who was highly thought of a couple of drafts ago, and Victor Oladipo, who was a number two pick. You got two lottery picks from a very difficult situation. And you look at Oladipo, we had a tweet, I had a tweet about 3 weeks ago or so, and it came with the help of Greg Rappaport with Pacers.com about how eerily similar Oladipo and Paul George's numbers were the first 4 years. And my intent with that tweet was not to say that Oladipo was as good as Paul George, or to say that Oladipo will be as good as Paul George. I actually took some heat from this, Jeremiah. I don't know if you saw this, but this podcast
I did see that yeah.
That I'd never heard of, right. called me an idiot Pacers guy, and I actually went and listened to it, and it was rather humorous, but the guy starts pulling out all of these deep dives on all these analytical statistics and all of these different things proving that Paul George.
So you gave him some content then,
I guess. And he was proving that I was wrong, but he was kind of misguided. And in fairness, in Twitter, you only get so many characters to say your point. My point was not that Oladipo is as good as George or that Oladipo will be as good as George. My point is it's still really early on Oladipo, and George made some significant jumps years 4, years 5, years 6 down the line. That was my point. A, maybe that Oladipo's been a little better than you might think. But B, the main point was that Oladipo is still young. He's been in this league for so much time, and he started so early with Orlando that he feels like a known commodity in a lot of ways he is. But he still has a lot of growing to do, and that's something that hopefully the Pacers will catch here as he, you know, spends the next, hopefully, handful of years here. He's still before that prime point. And Sabonis, that's obviously the case. This is a guy who, you know, was drafted number 11, but a lot of people had him going in the top 10, top 7 a couple drafts ago, and, you know, potentially fits in really well next to Miles Turner. That's another thing a lot of people don't often talk about when they're reviewing trades is fit. And I think you see what Sabonis can do, a really good rebounder, can extend the floor. I think what he does, you know, could complement Miles Turner really well down the line if those two are indeed your 4 and your 5 of the long-term future. So I think those two aspects also had a huge part to do with it. And now it's just time, you know, to wait until we get to training camp here and to see how those two fit in Indy and see what Sabonis can become. But you did get that, you know, high-ceiling what-if type of player that so many wanted with a pick that they didn't get. You got that in Sabonis, and you don't have to wait until next draft to then pick a guy who then might be 2 years away. The timetable is a lot quicker with a guy like Sabonis and certainly with Oladipo.
Yeah, there are a number of teams in the NBA that are not set up to succeed next season or maybe the following season. So I think that Mark Monteith on Pacers.com had a really well-written article with a lot of historical perspective, and he even used the word tanking and why tanking is not necessarily the way to go and why it has not been the way to go from a Pacers perspective in their franchise's history. And you think about these two guys, if you would just have based a trade around draft picks, then you're looking at a year from now bringing in someone who could be 18 or 19 years old, let's say, or 2 years from now if it's a 2019 draft pick, someone who could be 19. And then by rights, their really natural time to be legitimate good NBA players are going to be, you know, when they're 21 or 2. And those draft picks that you might receive are probably well protected. They're not going to be a number one pick. So you're waiting so long to get a reward back for a trade if you're basing it around some of those future draft picks solely. And in this case, Kevin Pritchard and that entire scouting department, they went back and they looked at the profiles that they had, specifically of Sabonis and of Victor Oladipo coming out of the draft, and then seeing from there how those two guys were able to develop. A little bit more on Sabonis later, but I can remember Victor Oladipo during his Orlando Magic portion of his career as we planned pregame coverage for Pacers Magic games. So much of what we talk about when with regards to an opponent is one or two key players that the Pacers need to keep an eye on. Maybe it's someone that causes a matchup problem, someone. Sometimes it's because of the local angle, but we spent a lot of time talking about Victor Oladipo, and it was not just because he went to Indiana University. It was because what he did, how explosive he was, the plays he was able to make. Everyone kind of just immediately thinks about last season with the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, I don't know anyone that could really have shined in that situation with the kind of ball dominance that Russell Westbrook had, and also with, you know, the way he just basically took over games, I think it was probably difficult for everyone, especially new players to that system and to him, to get comfortable. And Kevin Pritchard said in the press conference when he introduced Sabonis and Oladipo, he said that Victor told him that his usage rate should go up here in Indiana. And it's funny to hear a player acknowledge that or even think about those terms in a statistic like that. But Victor Oladipo is going to have a bigger opportunity. A lot more is expected of him. And he is really coming into that sweet spot of his career where he can still improve, but this is really the time. So I think you're getting Oladipo at a time when he can really improve from what other people have thought about him, and he's a good foundation piece. Some would argue about the money that he is going to be making. Someone that's drafted in the top five or top 10 that is a legitimate NBA, you know, I'm not going to call Victor Oladipo a superstar right now, but a legitimate starter caliber player, the facts are that person's going to make a pretty significant amount of money, at least up until the point we are. Who knows where things are going with the salary cap and with different teams not having as much money moving forward, but you've got to pay somebody, and you've got about $100 million to spend for your 15 players, and you're going to have the bottom five make, you know, league minimum, maybe even the bottom six or seven at some point, depending on what you're able to put together. You got to pay somebody, and I like to have someone who is not worried about a contract, not necessarily ever going to be disgruntled. Victor will not be disgruntled. He's happy to be here. He wants to be here. He calls himself a Hoosier, even though he's kind of been in different parts of the United States and even has some heritage out of the country, just from some of his family as well. But Victor Oladipo is someone who loves being back. He did not have second thoughts. It does not sound like at all when he first heard about this opportunity. And I think that's not why you acquire someone, because of the, you know, relationship he has with Indiana. But I think it does help, and you know, I'm just interested to see how it all develops. And I think I would caution everyone who, you know, I continue to talk to people, and I think people have pretty well moved on. Every once in a while, I'll still have someone though that tells me, I just wish we could have gotten more for Paul. And I think they base those around things that, you know, people they trust and respect. And I'll admit, I trust, and or at least I enjoy listening to some of the people, but I don't know, I don't agree with everything that some of these people with national forums have to say. And I'd love to almost have a conversation with them myself, because I think it'd be easy to really poke some holes in some of their arguments instead of just letting them continue to talk negatively. So we can move on from that, because really that was just part of what's been a very busy summer and what's starting to shape up. Pat, I texted you not long ago about the team that started last season. That was such a new team, and a team that seemed like it was kind of a foundation type building team, and you maybe not have as much turnover a year later. Well, things happen. The Paul George situation kind of caused everyone to reevaluate the plan and really come up with a plan B, even though I'm sure they had thought about that. But five players, at least at this point, the roster may not be set yet, but five players currently looking like guys who will start this upcoming season, who started last season with the Pacers. And that's just, it's crazy to me, but it is the NBA right now.
Yeah, it's wild to think about. And then Lance being the sixth, but of course he came at the very end of last season. I had one of those moments when I was watching just a couple of hours before the jersey reveal, which we can get into briefly a little bit later here in the podcast. The video that you saw, we were watching it a little bit before it came out at the Street Fest, and you know, Lance is all over it. And it's kind of, it's funny for me to think, you know, let's go 5 months back and imagine where things would be if you're in February or whatever, and you're in the middle of a season that's, you know, been a little bit trying. And I know the players and everybody felt like they should be getting a little bit more success than they were. And to think that all of a sudden you'd have this jersey reveal where the faces of your franchise are, of course, Miles Turner, but a guy like Lance Stephenson, who was so off the radar at that point, it wasn't even funny. And it just goes to show you how quickly things can change in a matter of moments. But one thing we discussed on the Saturday show on 1070, you look at this roster, and it's not complete. It's not totally done. The Pacers have a reported move that is not official, and we can obviously only discuss official moves anyway. But part of the area where the Pacers struggled at times last year is they had so many similar type of players. They were a good group to be around, a fun group to be around. They were easy. They were laid back. But you need different kinds of guys, I think, throughout the locker room to have a really successful season. And you look at some of the types they have now. You talk about a team that is going to go all out and going to leave it all out on the floor each and every night. And you go down this roster, and it's almost like you've got an entire team full of guys that you would describe as high-intensity, energy, high-motor, give-it-all type of guys. Oladipo certainly fits that. Stevenson fits that. Miles Turner fits that. It seems like guys like Sabonis, Corey Joseph fit that. Bojan Bogdanovic, what he brings off the bench. If Ike Anagbogu can get to a point where he's healthy enough and in a position where they feel like they can play him, that's his MO. And I think you're going to see a team this year. We don't know how many wins they're going to get. And I think a lot of people will have predictions that are all over the board when we get closer to making official preseason prediction time. But I'm fairly confident. You look at the energy Lance brings, the enjoyment to the game Lance brings, Oladipo. You have Oladipo and Glenn Robinson III, two of the best dunkers in the league. You've got a lot of entertainment value on this team. And I feel pretty confident in saying, even still a couple of months away from the season, that you're not going to come to Bankers Life Fieldhouse very often, if at all, next season and feel like, you know, I'm not sure this team gave 100%, or I'm not sure the team left everything on the floor. Results aside, I think you're going to find a team that's going to play its heart out each night in and night out, and is going to give you an entertaining product. And we'll see how many wins that equals up to once we get to, you know, April of 2018. But that was one of the very first things that Kevin Pritchard brought up in his press conference where he was named as the president, was that we want these certain type of players. And it's amazing how quickly in just one offseason he's been able to find a team that almost entirely fits that narrative.
And it shows that maybe Kevin Pritchard and company were feeling some of the same things that we were feeling and that fans were feeling, because with so much roster turnover, this is not to really single out or say this specific player who was a free agent and not re-signed, or maybe this player who was part of a trade did not, you know, try as hard or put forth a full effort. But as a group, that group effort wasn't enough. And I think we're two people that have to talk about and talk to the players immediately following these games on a regular basis. You know, every game ends and I kind of have to talk about it, while much of the time I'm not the analyst, so I don't have to necessarily opine about what I saw, but I pretty much give my opinion. And you talk to the guys in the locker room after every home game and to someone on the court as well. And I think one of the things that I got tired of hearing from comments and having to maybe even explain what I saw was comments that, well, we just didn't have enough effort, or there wasn't enough energy. And, you know, there may be nights on the fourth night of a five, you know, four games in 5 days or a back-to-back where you hear that and you don't like it, but it is an explanation and no one wants to make an excuse, but it may be a valid explanation. But we heard it really too many times last season, and Nate McMillan was really the one who said it quite often, and he is summing up what he saw, and he would say there wasn't enough energy, there wasn't enough fight. And I think, I don't know, like you said, how many games this team is going to win, but I don't anticipate we will hear that as an excuse or an explanation very many times this season. During the press conference with Sabonis and Oladipo, Kevin Pritchard reiterated some of the things he was looking for in players that he said during that introductory press conference when he took over for Larry Bird. He said, I want tough kids, guys to play together, smart kids, and flyers. And there are no wings on the floor, but he wants them to fly up and down the floor. And I feel like this may be a good time to bring up the second unit. We could kind of go in and say who looks like they'll be the starters at this point. But I think what he wants is guys that are going to play as hard as they can. And it's almost like what you would tell your seventh grade basketball team. Guys, put it out there, give everything you've got, and when you're tired, we'll give you a break and we'll get someone else in there, because I think the depth on this team could be quite a bit better than it's been in recent years. It's been a problem. I think anyone that's watched the Pacers over the last who knows how many years, the bench has been problematic. Even in those Eastern Conference Finals years, the bench was a weakness of this team, and the bench could be a strength of this team this season.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, if you just look at the team on paper right now that probably has the best chance to start, then your backups look potentially something like this: Corey Joseph, Lance Stevenson, Glenn Robinson III, Domantas Sabonis, and Al Jefferson as your next five in line, or the number two if you're looking at a two-deep type of scenario. And you look at that five, and there's really a lot of promise there. I mean, Corey Joseph in Toronto helped bridge that gap really nicely when Kyle Lowry went down for an extended period of time and kept Toronto in the mix of things in the East last year. Lance Stephenson is a player who some thought and maybe still could start this season, and Joseph could too. I think Collison comes in as the most likely number one, but I think Joseph will push him. I think Lance Stephenson will do everything he can to try to show that he could start and he deserves to start. Whether or not that's going to happen or not is a different item. Glenn Robinson III, we saw him start plenty of times last year, and some of the best basketball the Pacers played was with Glenn Robinson III in the starting lineup. And then Domantas Sabonis is a guy that started for Oklahoma City last year. So those four especially, we know what Al Jefferson is. He's been a starting caliber center and an all-star level center at times in his career. All five of those guys, and potentially even more, there's question marks on who all is going to make up this roster. I didn't even name the first-round draft pick TJ Leaf. EK Anabogu, I know, has a really high ceiling if he can get to the point where he's healthy and usable for the upcoming season. I think the depth, it's interesting that this is coming in a year where you lose a guy like Paul George. It's interesting then that the depth might be about as good as I can remember it.
Exactly, and you went up and down really the list of those backups, and you just compare who you had in that second unit oftentimes last season, and nothing against these guys, but I like Aaron Brooks, but I like Corey Joseph better, and if Monte Ellis at this point in his career, I like what Lance Stephenson can bring, then Monte Ellis. Monte started sometimes he came off the bench. I look for Glenn Robinson III to make a major step forward. He continues to grow. He continues to improve. And Sabonis is a guy that I think at his age, with what he's already experienced in just one season in the NBA, if he's your backup four, you're in a really good position. And I would not be surprised to see him really push Thaddeus Young a little bit for minutes in that starting lineup. He won't make it easy to say, I'm not going to start. I think the Pacers are probably a better team to start this season with Thaddeus Young at the four and let Sabonis come off the bench. But I think he's going to be a guy that's going to play considerable minutes. And Al Jefferson doesn't spend a lot of time in his offseason in Indianapolis. But if he's able to get in a little bit better shape and be that dominant, I'm going to take a backup center and I'm going to take him to school in the first half and pick up 8 or 10 points. And maybe he doesn't play as much in the second half. He can be a valuable piece. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing that competition. And that's one of the other things that Kevin Pritchard stressed is that Miles Turner has a starting spot. I think everybody understands that. And you could argue Victor Oladipo is a guy that is going to be in the starting lineup. But he wants there to be competition at every spot. And I think that's kind of the roster he's putting together. And he's not finished putting that roster together. And he will be someone, I think, who will be okay with tweaking in late November or in January. If he sees someone out there that's available that's going to help this team, he's going to try. He's going to swing and take a few cuts and see what when he's able to make good contact.
Yeah, and I think it also is a roster that could allow Nate McMillan to be really creative. You know, I don't know if you'd ever consider going in this direction. These are just a couple of hypothetical scenarios. But if Domantas Sabonis comes in tearing things up in training camp and in the preseason and you say you have to start him, but you know, a Thad Young is too good of a player to have coming off the bench. Well, you know, it's not an ideal scenario to have Thad Young playing the three, but, you know, maybe you look at doing something like that. We know Thad, when his wrist is healthy, can knock down the outside shot, and maybe you'd look at Thad at the three, Sabonis at the four, Miles Turner at the five, Collison and Joseph. You know, perhaps you could get those two on the floor in some secondary lineups together. TJ Leaf, you're going to want to get him some playing time, and he's potentially, you know, 10th or 11th on that list, which is a really good thing. It's no diss toward Leaf, but when your mid-first round draft pick, you know, is you know, maybe your 10th or 11th guy, I think that's a really good sign for the depth that you have. And then, you know, Glenn Robinson III, he can play the two or the three. Lance, I think, realistically could play the one, the two, or the three down the line. So Miles Turner, in a, you know, could play the four in a pinch. Domantas Sabonis, I think, could play the five in the pinch. So it allows for a lot of versatility, I think, for Nate McMillan. And one guy we haven't spent a ton of time talking about because he is one of the known commodities this season is Miles Turner. And this is a guy, I think, you know, along with Victor Oladipo and Lance Stephenson, probably going to be some of the faces of the team next year. But you hear what he has had to say since this trade, and you and I have known how mature Miles is, and still at such a young age, he's well beyond his years in terms of maturity level, but he really seems like someone who is ready for this challenge. You don't normally throw a player this young at the everything that the Pacers are probably going to throw at him this year. I think it'll be a really good trial by fire in a way. I think he's more than proven his ability to be a quality NBA player, but he's going to be pushed this year to try to lead a team. You mentioned the moments where the players wondered, you know, why they didn't have it last season. And so many times it felt to me like Miles Turner wanted to be that guy, but also felt like he needed to give his due to Paul, and Paul's the leader, and I have to let Paul lead, so I've got to be secondary in that regard. And Jeff Teague and down the line. This is Miles Turner's team now, and it's just kind of coincidental. He had, I saw a couple days ago, an Instagram post where he posted a picture of the city skyline and how much he loved Indy, and I think he knows how much right now that something like that means to these fans who, I think betrayed might be a little bit too strong for Paul George, because we all have to remember, if he ends up in L.A., that's going home, and how many players have, you know, wanted to come home and have come home back to Indy. It's an unfortunate circumstance for the Pacers, and I certainly think Paul could have handled that better. But for Miles to have the wherewithal, you know, even to post something simple like that from an on-the-court to an off-the-court perspective, you look at all these guys and who you're most interested to see next season. For me, it might be Miles and just how he handles this pretty significant transition of, okay, you're a promising piece to, hey, maybe you're our guy. You're our go-to guy. You're our number one guy in the offense. And he's going to have some high moments, some low moments, I'm sure. But a guy with his level of intelligence, I think, speaks pretty promisingly to how he'll handle that scenario once we hit October.
I agree, Pat. And just to piggyback on that just a little bit, and some of the things that I've told, you know, fans and people that have come up and asked me what I think about what's happened in this offseason, and so much of what you have to think about the offseason moves and you think about the new players, you have to almost start with Miles Turner. And I think Miles is someone who, the first 2 years of his career, I think the first year he definitely was learning. And he was, while he was trying to soak up everything, it was coming at him so fast. I think in year two, while he was not perfect, there were ups and downs, as you referenced, that there will continue to be. I think he started to get it a lot more, but he was cautious not to try to do too much because he understood his place on the team in with relation to where Paul George was. And I guess it's easy to say this now, and some would say you wouldn't say this if Paul were coming back to the Pacers. But I just felt like Miles tried really hard to get Paul to accept him, to try to fit in with Paul, and I just didn't always feel like that Paul got, you know, it didn't click with Miles. Their chemistry, their connection, while everything they said publicly, and there were never anything moments or times that I saw them get in disagreements, it just seemed like it didn't really fit. The wrong size screw trying to go into the wrong size hole, sometimes it just doesn't fit. And I think at times it was just Paul would get frustrated with Miles, and instead of trying to help him, he would just kind of get upset, and then Miles would tend to show that disappointment. And I think Miles is going to play so much more free this upcoming season just because he knows so much more about the NBA. He has so much more confidence, but he knows it's his team. He doesn't have to look over his shoulder. He doesn't have to try to prove himself or to make someone else happy, because I think everyone understood when that team was put together last season that the goal was not to be a 7 seed. The goal was to be a team that gets home court advantage in the first round, and the Pacers never seemed to be in that top 3, top 4 mix, and that caused frustration for everyone, and that frustration can affect people's personalities, the way they play, the way they carry themselves off the floor, and so they just didn't ever know whether they should be happy. They were happy at times, but they didn't show that enthusiasm really until Lance came. So, you know, you said a lot about Miles that I agree with, and I just wanted to get that out there, that I feel like that Miles tried his best. He learned a lot in 2 years, and now he's ready. to take the next step. Miles is someone who's coming back. I think for our pick three in this offseason edition of the Sideline Guys podcast, maybe we do a pick three of which new Pacers players, at least wearing a new uniform next season, are you most looking forward to watching? And Pat, we'll let you go first.
Yeah, this is, well, as you mentioned, we have a lot to pick from because just six players are back from last year's team and just five that started the season a year ago. So I'm going to start with Corey Joseph. He's a player that I've long admired, his time with the Spurs, his time with the Raptors. He seems like a guy who just takes care of business, is a really solid, consistent player. Might never be the guy who gives you 20 and 10, but is somebody that's going to give you such a consistent effort night in and night out. He's a really smooth player, a really good defender. And, you know, it's funny because it reminds me almost a little bit of when George Hill and Darren Collison both came in within a relatively similar time frame. And Collison was originally the starting point guard, and then as the season wore on, George Hill took over. And it's funny that Collison is in this example again after coming back. By no means am I saying that I think Corey Joseph will be the starting point guard by year's end, but I do think he's really going to push Collison. And I hope that Collison, you know, who's a little bit more experienced and more of a veteran now, takes that and helps him improve his game even higher. And we already know that Collison's been a quality starting point guard in this league for some time. But I'll be interested to watch Corey Joseph, what he brings to the second unit, assuming he is there. Can he push Darren Collison to be an even better version of himself? And does he ever come, you know, to a point in time where he's maybe threatening to start? Those are answers for way down the line. We're not even at training camp yet, so I don't want to, you know, put the cart before the horse by any means. But Joseph's a guy that has been on a short list of some of my favorite players throughout the NBA on other teams to watch over the last handful of years, and I'm really interested to see what he does once he gets in here for training camp.
So from one point guard to another, and as I brought up this pick three, I had to think, well, there are guys who are not exactly new Pacers, but new Pacers now. And I'm looking forward to seeing Darren Collison. He was a free agent signing. I remember when I first got the news, I actually was at Yankee Stadium in early July, and it's weird. You always remember where you are when you hear things, and I don't know that the Darren Collison signing is going to be one of those lifetime memories, but I was with my parents, and I saw the tweet from one of the national reporters, as we, you know, are traditionally not trying to break stories or really even try to find out what's going on in the trade market. And I thought, that's kind of odd, because I was still not sure exactly what the team was really trying to do this upcoming season. Do they really want to try to win as much as they can? And this was, like I said, in the early July. And I thought, how does Darren Collison really fit? But I do remember Darren Collison's first stint in Indiana, and I really enjoyed being around him, and I thought of him at the time as someone that I thought was maybe being groomed to be that point guard of the future, and it just didn't work out. And I think Darren's even said how disappointed he was that he could not really stay in Indiana. So his good experiences, his good memories, and now the NBA experience that he has, that he's been able to acquire in a various amount of, you know, numerous stops in various capacities, I think he fits in pretty well with this team, and it does show there is no plan to step back. Now, if this season goes awry and midway through the year it just looks like the pieces don't fit, well, then maybe Darren doesn't play as much, and you maybe then you build for the future. But I think the plan is to start this season, see how good these pieces can play together, how well they fit, and I think he's a good point guard to have in this mix. And a good compliment, really, with the Corey Joseph, the Victor Oladipo, the Lance Stephenson, because you can maybe interchange these guys just a little bit. But I like having a veteran with what is a primarily a younger team.
Yeah, completely agree with all of the above there as it relates to Collison. The point guards will be interesting to watch next year. Our combined pick three, Domantas Sabonis. This is the guy who is the biggest unknown, I think, in a lot of ways, and there's a lot of hope for him. You know, you watch him on tape, really good footwork. He's a good passer. He's a relentless rebounder. He can hit the shot out and to and past the three-point line. And, you know, you've gotten to see, because you travel with the team, so you've gotten to see him, I guess, one more time than I've gotten to see him with Oklahoma City last year. But, You know, he's the big what if, the guy that could really swing this trade if you're looking in 5 years and this Paul George trade ends up being really positive for Indiana. It's likely because Sabonis turns into a big-time player. Still too early for him, even in year two, I think, to know what he is going to be. But typically, players tend to grow the most through years one and two. And remember, he started for Oklahoma City, and I think he's going to really push that. And if he doesn't start, I expect him to get, you know, mid-20s type of minutes pretty early on because they need to continue to get him a workload. But he's a player that I think maybe when you look at this entire group of new guys coming in, he stands out number one to me.
Yeah, this is someone who has a great amount of potential, and he was a key player, someone that I remember both times the Pacers played the Thunder. There were a couple of things I thought about that team, and one was how hard they played. Now, Russell Westbrook makes everyone, I think, play pick up their intensity level a notch, but you can't just tell someone to do it. They have to have that sort of as part of their personality. And the two guys the Pacers got from the Thunder, Victor Oladipo and Sabonis, are two guys that have that as their personality. But I remember thinking this was a guy who was 20 years old at really for much of the season, is 21 now, I believe. I remember how physical he played, how hard he played. He's one of those guys that, you know, I played a little bit of basketball, not at the level that these guys do, but there were guys that I remember playing against that were much more physical than you thought. And you figured that out, or you learned that early when on a block out, you're trying to go for an offensive rebound and you all of a sudden got a hard check to the midsection and you said, this guy means business. And from my vantage point, watching both of those games up close and personal, Pacers Thunder, I thought, this is a guy that really gets after it and he is strong. I mean, some guys you wait 3 or 4 years to have them as full-time NBA, you know, professional basketball players to see their body fill out. I was impressed with how strong he already was and really the potential that he can have. We know what the Pacers thought of him coming out of the draft. We know the experience that he got. Maybe did hit a little bit of a rookie wall. Maybe wasn't quite prepared to be a starting player on a Western Conference playoff team in his rookie season. Very few rookies really are, but really a good foundational piece and someone I'm looking forward to not only seeing how he plays with the Pacers, but also how he interacts with someone like Miles Turner when they share the floor together, and also really to see how he complements TJ Leaf. I think that will be an interesting dynamic in that two guys, you'd say Leaf's a four, but you could maybe envision times that Sabonis maybe is playing some five, maybe backup five. You got some interchangeable parts in the front court as well, and really an entirely new front court now with the exception of Miles Turner when you think of the cutting of Kevin Seraphin earlier this week.
Yeah, without a doubt. So Domantas Sabonis, he'll be our guy, I think, at least right now. Still a month and a half or so from training camp that we're the most interested in seeing coming up in the next couple of months. Let's obviously, the podcast, it's not a visual element, so we didn't want to spend a ton of time on this. But here as we close, Jeremiah, you were out at the River West Street Fest about a week ago when the Pacers, not even a week ago, when the Pacers unveiled their new jerseys, their new court, some new designs. You got to talk to a lot of the players. What was the overall sentiment?
Just some enthusiasm. I tell you what, obviously in that situation, you're going to get some pretty positive comments, but it was genuine. I mean, the guys I talked to, I actually talked with Glenn and with Miles and with Lance, and each of them were just lighting up their faces when asked about the jerseys, what they liked about them. You can tell that they're excited about the new look, the new direction, and I think it's a good time for the new jerseys. Some would say maybe it's 2 or 3 years overdue, but with the transition from Adidas to Nike, I think it was wise to wait until that time to come up with a little bit of a new look, and I know you know really as well as anyone how much work has gone into this launch of a new look, the new court, the new jerseys. And let's remind everyone, these are just two of the jerseys. There will be more surprises to come that I think people will enjoy. But I think initially when you're someone that's a fan and you're waiting for something for so long, you don't know how to react because there is no perfect look. But I think after about a day and you really have a chance to let them sink in, I think for the most part what I've seen and the people I've talked to have been pretty positive. And I know the players enjoy it. And so that's probably most important. The players like them much more than what they were wearing the last few seasons. They fit better. They feel better. They're more comfortable. and it's a new look for really the 50th season was last season, moving into the 51st season. It's a good time to change things up.
And as Lance Stevenson says, he feels like he has nothing on. So that's
so he should be fast, right? And he was asked about the weight that he's lost. He does look much better. And given where he was at when the Pacers signed him late last season, where he had not been playing, he'd been battling injuries. You combine how light Lance feels in the jerseys with how much weight he may lose by the time the season starts, along with, let's not discount this either, he'll be close to 100% health, hopefully, and he was playing on a bad ankle late last season, was doing everything he could to just pretty much stay on the floor. This training staff is maybe one of the biggest reasons that Lance Stevenson loves Indiana, outside of the people and everything else he loves. He loves the Pacers trainers. So Carl Eaton, Josh Corbeil, they know Lance. They know how to deal with his injuries. He's had some lingering things that they know how to make him feel better. And so to go into an entirely off season of working with them, he's going to be in really, it'll be the best Lance I think that anyone's ever seen.
Yeah, that relationship with the trainers, I think, is always one of the most underlooked aspects of a player and his ability to perform at peak level year in and year out. All right, I think we got just about, 4 months or however long it had been covered. But, hey, good to talk to you again. I know we spoke on 1070, so we got a lot of these thoughts out over the radio airwaves. But we know we have a group that listen on just the podcast version. So, again, we apologize. I will take a majority of credit for that. Some extenuating circumstances.
Hey, you don't want to do a European vacation review podcast?
Maybe we'll... all I got to say is this. If I was a fan and I was listening to 41 minutes of pretty hard-hitting off-season discussion and Pat starts talking about his off-season vacation, I think this is what I'm hitting.
I think you might underestimate. I think there's some interest in the wild excursions of one Pat Boylan. But maybe if you see Pat out on the streets of Indianapolis, be sure to ask him about that European vacation. And maybe if he does this again, because I think this was year two for you, maybe you bring a camera. Maybe we could put together a nice little Where's Pat version of a off-season feature for the pregame show.
Hey, not a bad idea at all. But it was good to get one of these in the books. Well, I don't know when we'll do our next one. Maybe a training camp preview or if there's something soon.
Hey, with the schedule coming out, maybe we could do a little bit of a schedule. A schedule podcast. It's one of those days that I always look forward to. I'm still someone who has a big desk calendar where I write all the games in. I know people like to just download it to their phones, but I've got my calendar ready, and I'm hoping in the next week or so, give or take, we'll have an idea of when and where these 82 games will be played.
Yeah, we are hoping it's soon, but don't ask, because we don't know either. We just had a meeting about that, and we don't know when the schedule's coming out either, but it is tended to be sometime in early to mid-ish August, and so we are on pins and needles, just like all of you, waiting for that schedule to come out, and I know there's going to be a game or two that probably sticks out of the most interesting of that in the Pacers schedule coming up. So yeah, we'll get you a podcast once that schedule does release. Any final thoughts from you?
Nope, just enjoy the interactions I've had really out in the public with fans. It seems like that there are a lot of people that I'm talking to, and if you recognize me, and occasionally sometimes I'm wearing a hat or haven't shaved for a couple days, that's kind of the off-season look, but I've enjoyed the people that have come up and talked to me, and you can tell how many Pacers fans are out there, and I enjoy talking with each and every one of you, so it's been great to meet some new fans at different times in the summer, and training camp will be here before you know it. So we look forward to getting back to work. I know you've been working pretty hard with the Fever, so great job with you as well. But keep an eye on the Fever, and then we look forward to this Pacers season getting started.
Yep, we'll have a Fever telecast coming up on Friday on WNDY. If you'd like to catch that one, there is almost always basketball played here at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. That'll wrap it up for this edition of the Sideline Guys podcast. We'll talk to you once we know the schedule.